Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Attention all stations. Conelrad has declared an alert emergency action message. Prepare to copy. Stand by all stations. Conelrad has declared Contra Radio Network is live and broadcasting. Stand by for this episode.
And good evening. I'm John Jeffords, your host, founder, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network, your preparedness radio. That's true. Before we get started, I got to get something I wanted to say to all of you. If you've been paying attention, and most of you do because you're a smart audience, and as a smart audience, a responsible audience, you probably have been. If in case you missed it, quick update here. The Congress has gone ahead and approved a budget for $1.1 trillion, that's with a T, dollars. Now, last I heard, this country's broke. And so we could barely pay the debt on the outstanding debt this country has now. Now we're going to increase it. Yes, we're going to increase it. They say, but there's tax cuts built in. You know what? That is the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard. Yeah, tax cuts over the next, 10 years? Why isn't it this year? You know, you and I, when we overspend, we don't get to increase our credit limit and say, yeah, it's all right. And then never have to worry about paying the principal. We just pay the interest and go right on, right? That's the way the government's been operating for years now. So, this morning I'm listening to one of these Saturday morning talk shows, and they had Ben Stein on. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Ben Stein. Ben Stein's a really smart guy. He is. He's a smart guy. Ben Stein, because they asked him about this budget, and not only did he trash the Republican Party, as he should have, but then he also went on to trash the Democratic Party also for voting for this. Now, we'll get back to them in a minute. They're not off the hook here. But Stein says the economy is going to collapse. He said it's not a question of if, it's just now a real question of when. Now, my guess is that the government, being what they are, feeling they can say, do whatever they want, who's to say that when it all comes crashing down, they say, you know what, we're just not going to pay you. They're not going to pay their creditors, screw you. After all, it's a federal government. They can say and do what they want. And who's going to stop them? Who? The federal government will never be an arbiter of its own power. It'll just keep doing and doing and doing because who's going to tell them no, right? Now, as for both parties, the both major political parties in this country, a pox on both your houses. All of you are not interested in the welfare of our country. You are not interested in the welfare of its people. I don't care what you say. You know what they're really interested in? Is their own power, their own status within that political power party structure. They don't care. That all they're caring about is winning the next election, maintaining their status in the power structure, and maintaining their power. Now, the last three election cycles, I believe almost every representative and possibly every senator, I have to check on it, that voted for the Affordable Care Act is gone. They were voted out. short of outright rebellion. How do we stop this nonsense? We are being spent into an economic collapse. And when that happens, oh, you won't know what happened. I will tell you this, you're not going to go to the bank and get your money out. You're not going to go to an ATM and pull your money out because there's not going to be any money left. And we've talked about this. Go back in the archives and you'll see, you know, listen to the episode. Now, let's get back to it. If you want to participate, four ways you can participate. If you're listening in live, hit the Skype button. It'll take you right here to my switchboard and I'll plug you into the show. Or you can join the chat room. It's open. Jump in the chat room, type up what you want. I'll read it out and comment if appropriate or answer the question if I can. Two phone numbers, 516-453-9389. Again, 516-453-9389 or 855-355-8458, 855-355-8458. Four ways for you to participate in tonight's show. Wednesday night, when I was talking to Terry down in Missouri, I told him we're going to do a story. 9 tips for preppers with non-prepper spouses. This is an issue in the prepper world. For the majority of people, the majority of preppers, this is an issue. Now, we got this from Urban Survival Site. UrbanSurvivalSite.com. This was written by Alan, and I want to share it with you. So when the stock market crashed in 2008, I kind of sort of panicked, to put it mildly. I was convinced that economic collapse, martial law, and the end of the world as I knew it would arrive by the end of the year. So the next day, while my wife and I were at the grocery store, I started dumping armfuls of canned food into the shopping cart. "What the hell are you doing?" she said, looking at me as if I were taking a leak on the SpaghettiOs. I had told her that we needed to stock up on extra food, but I never said how much. Although my wife had no problem with preps for hurricane season, she had no interest in anything beyond that. As she looked at me, her face a mixture of anger and confusion, I suddenly realized that if I didn't handle this carefully, it would be a huge strain on our marriage. Rather than get into a fight in the middle of the grocery store, I put some of the food back. On the way home, I explained my concerns to her. She thought I was overreacting, and it turns out she was right. But we managed to avoid getting into a heated argument. Over the next few months, I was careful to purchase things I knew we would use anyways. "Just a hedge against inflation," I said. Eventually, she admitted that an economic collapse or some other widespread disaster could happen, and it didn't hurt to be prepared, just as it doesn't hurt to prepare for hurricane season, even if a hurricane never hits. Today, she's not as into prepping as I am, but she's definitely on board. So how did I pull this off? Did I nag her every time we went to the store or send her daily posts from the economic collapse blog? Not at all. Instead, I got advice from other preppers who had been in the same situation. I read articles on how to better communicate with one's spouse, and I was very patient. So here are the 9 tips I picked up along the way. Number 1. Start small. As I mentioned above, the first thing I did was start buying more of the food we already ate. I explained the concept of eating what you store and storing what you eat, and she didn't see the harm in buying, you know, in buying things that we would use anyways. If I had panicked and spent $1,000 on freeze-dried food, she would have been so angry, she probably never would have listened to me and talked about prepping again. So you need to use some, you know, the same strategy with your spouse. Start with items that are small, affordable, and that you can use anyway. Number 2, communicate your thinking at appropriate moments. You probably have several reasons why you want to prepare for a disaster, but don't overwhelm your spouse with all the reasons all at once. Instead, bring them up one at a time, the same way you would bring up other interests, you know, when it's appropriate. For example, if you're watching the news together and see a report about a natural disaster, you might mention that you want to get a water filter in case the tap water becomes unsafe to drink. But you don't want to bring that up while watching a movie or during a dinner date. Number 3, put an emphasis on safety. It'll be much easier to get your spouse on board if you emphasize safety. Most people have an innate desire to feel safe and secure, so they're more likely to see the logic behind prepping if you point out that it'll make them safe. For example, if you hear about a home invasion in your part of town, you could mention about that beefing up your home security might be a good idea. Number four, watch the right shows and movies. Watching zombie apocalypse survival shows and movies will help your spouse to better visualize why it's important to prep. You'll want to keep it real, though, so focus on movies that are a little more realistic. For example, your spouse will probably be more willing to prep for something like an earthquake than a zombie apocalypse. Then again, a show like The Walking Dead might interest him or her in guns or wilderness survival. It really depends on the person. Number five, use real-life lessons from real-life people. Do you have an acquaintance who's been personally affected by a major disaster? If so, it's an opportunity to point out how much better off that acquaintance would have been with some disaster preps. This is usually more effective than just watching the news or movies. It seems more real. If you don't have any acquaintances like that, get to know some. Join a prepper group, like the 11th APG, and listen to people's stories. Real-life examples of people who have made it through disasters will get your spouse thinking. Number six, avoid conspiracy theories. Never, and I mean never, use conspiracy theories as a way to convince your spouse to prep. Whether the conspiracy is true or not is beside the point. Even if it is true, telling your spouse about it could make you seem paranoid. And if you seem paranoid, then all your disaster preps might start to seem paranoid as well. Number seven, avoid arguments. This might be difficult if your spouse is really opposed to preparing. But the truth is that arguing will make it worse. A reasonable discussion is fine, but saying, you don't know what you're talking about, but I do, isn't. So if the discussion starts to take a bad turn, I want to change the subject and talk about it again some other time. Number eight, seek your spouse's input. This is a frequently overlooked tip because why would you ask a non-prepper a prepping question? But the point is to get your spouse involved. For example, if you're putting together a bug-out bag, you could present it to him or her and ask if there's anything you should add or remove. The more your spouse feels involved, the more likely he or she is to take an interest. Number nine, give it time. Above all, be patient. If you have the mindset that you need to get your spouse interested in prepping right now, then you need to change your mindset. Not only is cramming your views down, your spouse's throat disrespectful, it's futile. You can never force someone to become a prepper. It has to happen on its own. So use all the tips above, but bide your time. Pressing the issue too often could backfire. Now, of course, you don't have to get your spouse on board if you don't want to, but the fact is your prepping efforts will be stronger and more effective if your spouse is involved. You'll learn from each other, help each other, and be much more prepared than you would be otherwise. Your spouse might never be as into it as you are, but if you can at least get him or her thinking about the family safety, you'll have made a huge difference. Yes? No? What do you think? Give me a call. Give me a chat. Hit me up on the phone. You've got the numbers. You know what to do. You know, one thing I want to tell you about this, and before I forget, I left a Christmas party tonight. I did. Left a Christmas party tonight because I wanted to do the show. The wife says, well, why are you doing the show? I said, because I do it Wednesdays and Saturday nights, 8 p.m. And I do it because I have a responsibility to you, my listeners. You know, 6,000 of you a month listen to me. There's been 37,000 downloads of this show for a podcast. I have a responsibility to you, my audience, and I take that responsibility seriously. Now, before you start getting, if you're new to the show, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not a prepping expert. I'm not. I don't claim to be one, and I hope I never have to be one, but that doesn't mean I don't prepare. I don't stockpile stuff, items. I do, and that's important. So I want you to know where I'm coming from. I'm retired, so I take this, what you started out as a hobby and like a lark, and it's become something that's important to a great many people. And in case you missed it on the CRN Facebook page, we now have listeners not only in Europe and all over North America, including Canada. I think my farthest listener lives in Johannesburg, South Africa. This is resonating. Now, I want you to panic. Don't want you to be scared, because let's face it, if you're scared, you'll be so paralyzed because you're trying to analyze everything and then you won't get anything done. So don't analyze to the point you're paralyzed. Do what you need to do. All right. New preppers, go back in the archives of this show. We've done plenty of them. Read, listen. All right. What are we going to do next? Here's one. Now, if you want to, you can. The Contra Radio Network Facebook page. Feel free to like the page. And if you're listening on iTunes, do me a favor, would you? Rate the show. I'd really appreciate it. Help me out. The next one we're going to do is 7 things you can do if people find out you're a prepper. This is from Urban Survival Site, again by Alan. I read the headline here. I about choked and said, well, hell, I'm screwed. Everybody knows I am because of, well, this radio show. You've been outed. Maybe they found you online. Maybe they saw you carrying supplies into your house. Maybe a close friend or family member spilled the beans. However it happened, the word is out, and now everyone knows you're a prepper. This shouldn't affect your day-to-day life too much. You might have to deal with a few ignorant people who will think you're crazy and, you know, but that's about it. The problem will be when a major disaster happens and everyone and their brother shows up at your door. You won't be able to help everyone, so let's get that straight right off the bat, which means you'll have to turn people away, possibly with a gun in your hand. So what should you do if the wrong people know you're a prepper? You know, they say the first rule of prepping is you do not talk about prepping, okay? That's true to an extent. But if you're forming a prepper group, you got to say something to somebody. You have to. How are they going to get a prepper group started if you don't say anything to anybody? So number one is, you know, refuse to talk about it. Just because people know that you're a prepper doesn't mean you should start telling them about it. The less they know, the better. With any luck, some of them might even forget. But if you keep talking about it, you'll make an impression and end up being the first person they think about when the shit hits the fan. Number two, play down your preps. If people ask about your preps, tell them you just have a few things stashed away for blackouts, hurricanes, heavy snow, etc. If they insist on knowing more, tell them that there's not much to know and change the subject. You don't have to answer any questions you don't want to answer, all right? Number three, hide your supplies. Start hiding your food and survival supplies around your home and only leave out a week's worth of food. You could also bury survival caches or store supplies at homes of people you trust. Then if the people show up, even though you played down your preps, you could say, see, this is all I have. When they leave, you can get the rest of your supplies. Number four, prepare to bug out. If you think people will flock to your house after disaster strikes, then your best bet might be to bug out before they show up. Even, you know, if you haven't, start putting together a bug out bag and get ready to hit the road at a moment's notice. However, you don't want to bug out during a long-term disaster unless you have somewhere to go. So spend your weekends preparing a bug out location and don't tell anyone about it. Number five, turn your home into a fortress. Go all out. Buy steel doors and reinforce them. Install bulletproof windows or steel bars. Put a large fence and various obstacles around your home, etc. That is, if you can afford it. Also, keep in mind that you and your family will need an incredible amount of mental toughness if you can hear hungry people outside begging for food and water. We're going to divert here. This is called preparedness creep. We've talked about this, especially you prepper leaders out there. We've talked about this very issue. about people who show up at your house begging for food and water. What do you do? What are you going to do? And we threw in a bunch of variables with it. We played the devil's advocate. And there's no right answer. Because each situation will be different. It may be subtle differences, but it will be different. And only you are going to be able to make that decision when the time comes. And you alone, will answer for that decision. All right? Number six, prepare to fight. When people get hungry enough, they turn into animals. Even people you once considered friends might turn on you. If they get inside, despite your security measure, and it comes to an all-out fight, your chances of survival will drop dramatically. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. Familiarize yourself with your weapon of choice and get plenty of ammo for it. Again, this will take some serious mental toughness. Posted a video this week on the CRN Facebook page. A video of some punks training. They're transferring firearms. You need to be training too. Because if you don't train and you run up against these guys and you happen to meet one of them, you lose. That's the bottom line. You lose, and you lose huge. Number seven, move to another town. This is pretty extreme, and for many people, it's not very realistic. But if a lot of people know about your preps, it might be the only real solution. Look for another place to live and start applying for jobs there. Another thing you can do is move to another part of the town, but don't give anyone except people you trust your new address. I admit most of these options aren't very appealing. That's why it's best not to let the wrong people find out about your survival supplies in the first place. But they already found out, at least now you know what some of your options are going to be. Agree with it? Disagree with it? You tell me. What else are we going to talk about tonight? You know what? Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back. We come back, we'll talk about the top five bug out bag mistakes. All right, we'll talk about that next. Right now, let's get a hold of Top Notch Instruction, our good friend Todd at Top Notch Instruction.
John Jeffers here from Contra Radio Network, speaking to you on TopNotchInstruction.com. Top Notch Instruction, located in Northern Illinois, can cover your firearm certification needs. From the Illinois Concealed Carry through the basic NRA packages, including Range Safety Officer and the basic rifle, CMP Rifle Marksmanship, Defensive Pistol, and Urban Rifle. Now, hey, listen up. If you do like first aid and first aid is your thing and you need a medic or you're a prepper group, you can send them there for the American Red Cross First Aid, AED and CPR certification, and Wilderness First Aid, which, by the way, if you're a prepper and a patriot, I suggest you take that class. However, outdoors, hey, you like outdoors? How about outdoor survival, orienteering, backpacking, and the Illinois Hunter Safety Course? All these are available for a very reasonable price at TopNotchInstruction.com. Give Todd a call, or better yet, go to his website, TopNotchInstruction.com, TopNotchInstruction.com. And do I trust them? Yes, I do. I even had my wife go through the Illinois Concealed Carry Course there at Top Notch Instruction. I was even invited to stay and ask questions. So I do trust them, and you should trust them too. So see you there at Top Notch Instruction. Now back to the program.
All right, I said we talk about the top five bug out bag mistakes. If you're new to prepping, you might see this called a BOB. That's an acronym for bug out bag. Where did I find this? Oh, yeah. Okay, Urban Survival Site, once again. Written seven articles about prepping mistakes and how to avoid them. When I came across this video by Survival Know-How, I realized I haven't talked about bug-out bag mistakes. So this is something big most people don't even think about. So how do you mess up a bug-out bag? Just put the things you need into it and carry it, right? But there are at least five mistakes that I dare say a lot of preppers are making, and here they are. Number one, looking too militaristic, causing you to stand out. Don't make yourself a target. Now, I'm going to go out here and expand on that. We're going to extrapolate here. Look, most of you preppers have camouflage BDUs. You got your military stuff, your military grade equipment. Do not, at the drop of a hat, decide you're going to put on your BDUs and, you know, go stalking around the yard. All right? You don't do that. That comes at a later time. Because right now, think about it. When the grid goes down, the first two, maybe even 3 weeks, just wear normal clothing. By putting on your BDUs and grabbing your backpack and your rifle, like you're somebody else, soldier of fortune, you're just asking for trouble. You don't need it. All right? Number two, not having a good plan for where to go. Don't just wander the countryside. That's like saying, here, come rob me. I'm a moron. Number three, not having a sufficient first aid kit. If you don't have your health, you don't have anything. Number four, packing way too much stuff. Remember, you can't carry everything. You're a human being. You are not a pack mule. Number five, not testing your gear ahead of time, including the bag itself. Last Saturday, we talked about 20 tips to win a firefight. One of the tips was, if you are listening, make sure you have a reliable weapon. That is, you have to go out, shoot, and train with your weapon. You have to be familiar with it. You have to know how to use it. You have to know what its capabilities are, what you can and cannot do with it. All right? There you go. Your five no-nos for bug-out bags. This is kind of interesting, and I'll tell you why. Again, if you've been paying attention, you know about it. We're talking about power grid attacks. Our power grid is being hammered by both physical and cyber attacks. This was posted by Off-Grid Survival on September 11, 2015. According to federal records, our nation's power grid has been successfully penetrated by cyber attackers at least, get this, 159 times during a 48-month period. That's 4 years for you people that are in the inner city and go to a public school or graduate public school. You're all victims. That ended in October 2014. The records, which were obtained as part of the FOIA request filed by USA Today, show that the Department of Energy reported at least, get this, 1,131 cyber attacks during that same period. Although the Department of Energy claims, hey, oh, hold on, see Kenny K, glad you're here. See, just logged into the chat room. I believe he's probably back from Europe. Last we heard from Kenny, he was in the United Kingdom. And it was like 4 a.m. in the morning. He joined us anyways. Hope you had a good trip, Ken. So what are we talking about? Oh, yeah. Although the DOE, which is Department of Energy, claims these attacks have never resulted in any widespread outages, the attacks have raised fears over how vulnerable our nation's power grid is to an attack. Yeah, Kenny says he's glad, and he's also glad to be back. Good. So about once every 4 days, the physical and computerized security systems meant to protect this nation's power grid are affected by these attacks. According to USA Today, our government has little clue, now that's a big surprise, over who is actually attacking the grid. Even scarier, they have no real plan to deal with the aftermath of a successful attack. Between 2011 and 2014, electric utilities in the United States reported 362 physical and cyber attacks that caused outages or other power disturbances to the U.S. Department of Energy. In a vast majority of these cases, no suspects were ever identified. In 2013, we reported on a number of these attacks where people were targeting small power substations throughout the country. During one attack, an unknown group cut communication cables along a highway in San Jose, California, before firing over 100 rounds of ammunition into large transformers at the substation. The FBI categorized the attack as a military-style attack, but were never able to identify who was responsible. That attack revealed a major vulnerability in our power grid, according to a study by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, known as FERC. a relatively small coordinated attack in each of the nation's three separate electrical systems could cause the entire power grid to collapse. Now, the nation's power grid could be shut down in a matter of minutes if attackers targeted only 9 of the country's 55,000 electric transmission substations. I'm going to say that again. They target only 9 of the country's 55,000 electric transmission substations. An internal FERC memo summed up the danger. Destroy 9 interconnection substations and a transformer manufacturer and the entire United States grid would be down for at least 18 months. That's a year and a half for you people that are public school victims. Probably longer. Now, what experts say will happen if these attacks are successful? Well, according to Scooter 13, welcome. Last we checked, Scooter 13 is from Northern California. Welcome. Glad you're here. He's on the chat room. If you want to join the chat room, join him. According to Frank Gaffney, a spokesman for the Center for Security Policy, within a year of an attack that took out our power grid, 9 out of 10 Americans would be dead. That's a 90% casualty rate. He warns, we can't support a population of the present size in urban centers and the like without electricity. Former CIA Bureau Chief Claire Lopez issued a similar warning, saying that within 1 year, it is estimated that 9 out of 10 Americans would also be dead. Scott White, professor of Homeland Security and Security Management and director of the Computing Security and Technology Program at Drexel University, warns the potential for an adversary to disrupt, shut down power systems, or worse, is real here. Damon Petraglia, cyber terrorism expert and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force, told us, we are under attack 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Our military systems are probed in excess of hundreds of thousands of times per hour. Our private industry can claim similar statistics. So what can you do to prepare for an attack on our infrastructure? In the book, The Ultimate Situational Survival Guide, I devote a lot of time to this specific topic, because I believe our country's emergency managers have no real contingency plans to deal with this type of event. You need to be prepared to survive an extended period of time without power, without access to food and water, and without essential services. So stock up on food and water. Yes? Now I'm starting to sound like Gordon Ramsay. Stock up on food and water. Yes? You donkey. During a long-term grid-down situation, food and water will be the most important supplies you can have. Our entire food infrastructure is incredibly dependent on the grid. If something causes it to go down for a length of time, you're going to see widespread panic and chaos. So stock up on long-term food and water. Have cash on hand. That doesn't mean you're out to the ATM because it ain't going to work. You got to have it with you beforehand. During any type of grid-down situation, your debit and credit cards are going to be what? Useless, much like our members of Congress, useless. You need to have cash on hand to buy last-minute supplies and to deal with the initial stages of the disaster. Start becoming more self-reliant. That's called being responsible for yourself and your family. Over the last couple of decades, the world has seen an unprecedented spike in technology and access to learning. Unfortunately, we've also seen a growing number of people who have used this technology to tune out and lose their ability to be self-reliant. So to prepare for this danger, there are 32 resources, skills, all that you things that you should know. Again, go to the CRN Facebook page and look for the story and click on it, and you'll be able to click all the links with it. Stock up on firearms. During any type of long-term power outage, security is going to be a top priority. If the grid goes down for any length of time, chaos is going to quickly sweep the streets and social unrest will be one of the top threats you face. The unprepared masses are going to be unpredictable. In all likelihood, they'll become a threat to your safety. Stock up on backup power. That is, solar chargers, power generators, and portable battery backups are all things you need to invest in. For a very small amount of money, you can ensure that you have power to run things like emergency radios, ham radios, tablets, flashlights, and other emergency gear. That was from offgridsurvival.com. Let me put, let me, you know, most of my listeners, I have no idea where they really live. I don't know if they live in a major metropolitan area or not. I don't. But my thought is this. For the people that are living in the cities, especially the inner cities, it would be my guess, if you are not prepping, you might as well just go to the street and lay down and die. It's going to be horrendously tough to survive in the inner city. Now, it's not to say that those people that live there now don't have what I would call street survival skills. They do. But that's not the issue. That's half the equation. The other half is knowing what you need to stock up on right now. And then, you know, be able to not only keep it, but be able to use it properly. But that's me. That's what I think. Second one is by Pat Henry. It's medicine to stock up on for when there is no doctor. All right. By Pat Henry. This was posted on September 7th at the PrepperJournal.com. PrepperJournal.com. As preppers, we stock up on supplies that we think that we will need in an emergency. The order of priority for these items is usually tied to what our bodies need to survive. We can only live for 3 days on average without water, so we make plans to purchase storage containers and water filtration systems to cover that base. We next need food, so we stock up our pantries full of store-bought and freeze-dried food for a situation where the grocery store is either unreachable or out of food and no resupply is coming anytime in the near future. Security and shelter round out the list of initial survival concepts you want to take care of, but what else is there? Well, there are so many aspects to preparedness, but one of the more important ones to consider is medicine. If the grid goes down, the pharmacy will be in the same boat as that grocery store. If you are still able to purchase items, grid up, they may be sold out with no reasonable hope of resupply. You don't want to find yourself in a situation where you need simply medical supplies to treat illnesses or an injury and aren't able to procure them for your family. Thinking about the family's health from an injury standpoint isn't as sexy as buying a good shit-hits-the-fan weapon. We all know that. But knowing which medicine to stock up on for an emergency will allow you to plan for disruptions and possibly keep your family more healthy when they need it most. So what types of medicines to stock up on? The list certainly won't take place of a hospital pharmacy, and it surely won't give you the skills you need to treat every injury. But even the most basic of medical supplies and a little knowledge could help you out. So in shopping for medicines or thinking about first aid, I consider what types of injuries you could encounter in a disaster. Disasters, both natural and man-made, bring death, disease, and injuries. These medicines you need to stock up on, should take some of these into consideration while not addressing every conceivable ailment under the sun. To achieve a basic level of preparedness, I would recommend having the following items on hand. Get your pencils and papers ready. Pain medication, fever reducer. By pain medication, I am referring to over-the-counter pain relievers. This can help with anything from headaches or muscles from too much exercise after it's the fan or injuries. Acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol, is good for relieving pain and fever. It's generally less irritating to the stomach and is safer for children, but can be toxic to the liver if you take too much of it. Make sure you have the basics for wound care covered, also in a good emergency first aid kit or an IFAC, individual first aid kit. So this is what we have in my vehicle: aspirin, ibuprofen, which is Advil or Motrin, or examples of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. These reduce inflammation caused by injury, arthritis, or fever. They can also assist with pain associated with menstruation. Children should be given aspirin. It has been shown to cause Reye's syndrome and can cause other bad effects. For pain medication, I'd have at least a bottle or two of your favorite pain reliever. For smaller children who might take liquid or chewable tablets, I would stock up on that also. You don't want your child to experience a fever without having medicine to bring that fever down if needed. The medicines above can be useful for both reducing inflammation, relieving pain, and reducing fevers. I personally like aspirin for headaches, but We do have large bottles of the other two on hand as well. This next one may sound funny at first, but you're going to think about it and it's going to say, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. How about an anti-diarrheal? One of his readers put one of our readers put this as top 4 or 5 items to have in his bug out bag, and I can understand the rationale. The last thing you need to worry about in a bug out scenario is pulling over every 20 minutes or trying to get to a safe place to let it all out. Diarrhea, besides being messy as all get out, can dehydrate a person quickly. Dehydration leads to weakness, irritability, and confusion. Not the state you want to find yourself in during an emergency. There are two main types of medicines that can stop diarrhea. Thickening mixtures like psyllium absorb water and gives number two a little more volume. And antispasmodic products slow the spasms of your lower intestine. Loperamide is the active ingredient in products like Imodium or in Pepto-Bismol diarrhea control. I've also seen loperamide hypochloride in a pill form in dozens of first aid kits. Fortunately, I've never had to use them, but just in case, better safe than sorry. This next one's a big one. This is where, you know, I'll read it and then I'm going to comment. Sooner or later, someone you know will need something a little stronger than a clean bandage. Antibiotics are used in the treatment of bacterial infections. A cut from a rusty piece of metal when the grid up isn't life-threatening. Without something to fight the infection in a grid down world, a bacterial infection could spell death. Antibiotics do not work on viruses, though, so they won't help you out with every illness. Okay, so now you cannot buy antibiotics over the counter. Government says that we, the little people, we don't know what we're doing with antibiotics, and therefore, no, you can't buy it. You can buy fish antibiotics, which, by the way, if you listen to survivalprepper.net, when we talked to Dale and Lisa last month, Lisa practicing LN, I believe she's an LPN, I believe. And even she said, I have taken the antibiotics for fish. They are the same as the human biotics. So don't be thrown off just because they're the fish antibiotics. We have to say goodnight to Scooter 13. His internet is acting up, and he's going to listen to it on a later evening. So I say thank you for joining us tonight. We always enjoy having people get a hold of us. All right. So where are we going to get antibiotics? What you can do is this. You go to, it's called worldmedconnect.com. WorldMedConnect.com, and you can order antibiotics through there. All right? There you go. There you have it. So how do you know when to use antibiotics? The answer depends on what is causing your infection. The following are some basic guidelines from FamilyDoctor.org. Colds and flus. Viruses cause these illnesses. They cannot be cured with antibiotics. Cough or bronchitis. Viruses almost always cause these. However, if you have a problem with your lungs or an illness that lasts a long time, bacteria may actually be the cause. Your doctor may decide to try using an antibiotic, such as a Z-Pak or azithromycin. Sore throat. Most sore throats are caused by viruses and don't need antibiotics. However, strep throat is caused by bacteria. Your doctor can determine if you have strep throat and can prescribe an antibiotic. Ear infections. Several types of ear infections. However, a runny nose and yellow or green mucus do not necessarily mean you need an antibiotic. Obtaining extra antibiotics could be difficult without a willing doctor or an active prescription. A common alternative to pharmacy antibiotics is fish antibiotics. We talked about that. Largely made of the same compounds, fish antibiotics are available without a prescription. All right, Dr. Bones explains some of their uses in a collapse below. Dr. Bones also lays out situations, each different type of antibiotic in fish form, would best serve your needs in his book, Survival Medicine. I think it's a great resource, and if not this book, you should have a medical resource on hand regardless. Do not download the book to your iPad. or any electronic device because, or your Kindle or whatever, because you'll never, if the grid goes down, no electricity, you can't recharge it, you can't access it. Must be in physical paper form, period. Otherwise, you're screwed, all right? Kenny says, been stocking up on antibodies, and as I hear, the government wants to crack down on their availability. Yes, that's the loophole. The hard one to get is azithromycin. I did find some really good prices on eBay for azithromycin. For fish antibiotics. Got to put that in there. In addition to more serious antibiotics, you could avoid a lot of problems with simple topical antibiotic creams. If you only have small injuries, not serious burns, puncture wounds, or deep cuts, quick and repeated application of this ointment per instructions could keep any bacterial infections at bay. Now, colloidal silver. Just recently, colloidal silver has been given the thumbs up by NASA as an antibiotic to be used in the space program. That's true. How do I know it's true? I posted it. It's on the CRN Facebook page. All right. Now, colloidal silver isn't loved by the medical or scientific establishment. That doesn't mean it does not work. Colloidal silver, or CS as it's referred to by some, is said to be an excellent antibiotic with a side benefit of being able to be made with simple materials by anyone. You should research for yourself whether or not this is a prepper supply you want to store, and there are well-documented cases of people who have abused this. Okay. Other additional medical supplies, all right? Oral rehydration solution. To offset the effects of dehydration caused by illness or diarrhea, make your own by adding 6 to 8 teaspoons of sugar and 1 teaspoon of salt to 1 liter of water. Best to boil the water. Add the sugar and salt while it's still warm to dissolve completely and let cool, all right? Multivitamins. Well, I know the experts say that vitamins don't do anything for you. All right? But if you believe, but I believe if your body is deprived of vitamins, supplementing with a good vitamin is a good idea. Bandages, probably more than you would ever expect to need. Bandages on wounds need to be routinely changed and the wound cleaned based upon injury, of course. You're going to consult a medical resource book for frequency, and you can easily go through dozens with one injury. That's bandages, not books. Rubbing alcohol and hydrogen peroxide. Both alcohol and hydrogen peroxide are useful for cleaning wounds, but each have many other benefits in the Prepper's First Aid Kit. Cough drops. Sure, there are natural alternatives to cough drops, but if you can buy a few hundred for less than $10, so. Anti-itch cream. Itching sucks. Yes, no, yeah. Ken says, why not have an option? Some medicines work better than others on different people. That is true. Honey. Natural honey can be used to treat wounds and never goes bad if you have it stored properly. Plus, it tastes great on the oatmeal you have stored in your pantry, too. Knee braces and ACE bandages. A lot of injuries will simply take time to heal. A good knee brace can make getting around possible for someone with mild injuries. ACE bandages can help with sprains. Any prescriptions you take regularly. An entire post could be written about obtaining supplies of life-saving medical prescriptions. The sad fact is, in a grid-down world, many people who could no longer access their prescriptive medicines may die. There are alternative treatments, homeopathic remedies, and natural substitutes for some specific medicines, but you should all be researched thoroughly on your own. At a minimum, you should have at least 1 month's supply of any medicine you must take. If the disaster allows you to make it to another medical provider, you have some time. Thermometer. This is important. Get the old-fashioned kind if you're worried about EMP, although the newer digital thermometers are really nice too. Blood pressure cuff. Helpful situations. Also requires some training on how to use one properly. Don't forget the stethoscope to hear the heartbeat. So when do the medicines go bad? This is right up Ken's alley, I'm telling you right now. Kenny says, after reading World War II stories, lice medicine should be prepped. I agree. Baking soda has many uses too. Now, Yes, medicine does go bad, but it may not be bad in the way you think or as quickly as you might believe. For one thing, the expiration date of medicine does not mean the medicine is bad after that date. Medicine does start to lose its effectiveness over time, though, so keeping your medicine up to date is the best approach to having a good supply of medicine in your home. How quickly a particular medicine loses its potency will vary by the medicine and the conditions where it is kept. Moisture and heat are not friends to medicine, so a cool, dry place out of sunlight is the best location. Medicine that has changed color, texture, or smell, even if it is not expired, should not be taken. If pills stick together or are harder or softer, show cracks or chips, they likely need to be replaced. Now, this is really just a startup for some of the most obvious medicines to stock up on, but each person has their own needs. All right. Now, Kenny says on the chat room, all pharma has a 5-year maximum expire date. Most medicine in pill form lasts a very long time. I would agree. I agree 100%, Kenny. 100%. All right. So what else have we got going? I think so. We talked about that. Where to go? I'll say this for next time. This one of our stories for next time. All right. I think that's will wrap up for our Saturday night here on the Contra Radio Network. I thank you all for listening. Kenny, thanks for checking in. I do appreciate it. I always enjoy your input. Thank you again for sharing it with us. As for the rest of you, we'll see you Wednesday night. Is Wednesday Christmas Eve? I'll tell you what. If Wednesday is Christmas Eve, we will not do the show on Christmas Eve, all right? So what we'll do is we will do the show a week from, let's do it this week. You know what? Scratch that. We'll do it on December 23rd. How's that? We'll make it Tuesday. Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, we'll do the next episode, episode 106, here on Contra Radio Network. And then we'll kick it over until then, after that will be next Saturday, a week from tonight. So next show, Tuesday, 8 p.m. here, be on the 23rd. So in case you got your in-laws in and you just can't stand it anymore, get your mobile device, get your earphones on, and plug it in and tune them out and tune me in. Oh, Kenny says Thursday is Christmas Eve. Thursday's Christmas Eve, Friday's Christmas. Okay. So, well, all right, if that is true, because now we got the right timeline here, we'll do it on Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, our normal time, which is the 23rd. Again, if you're being bothered by, you know, the family, you can't take it anymore, or you're stressed out to the point you think I've taken hostages, listen to me. Tune into the show. And then we'll do it again. Let me see. So Friday's Christmas. We'll tell you what, we'll do it on the 26th for those of you that are not in jail awaiting your bond money. We'll do it that Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Yes, 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 we'll do that. That makes sense. I like that. So we'll just keep the schedule as it is. Wednesday, we'll do another roundtable report. I'd like to get Kenny in on that one, on the roundtable report, because we want to talk about medication anyways. If you have an idea for a show or a comment of the show, email me. ContraRadio@live.com, ContraRadio@live.com, and we'll see if we can put one together. If you'd like to be a guest on the Roundtable Report on Wednesday, email me, same email address, ContraRadio@live.com, and I will send you a link to join the show as a co-host, and you can, and it'll give you a much better connection. You could be able to hear better, and everybody else will be able to hear you when you talk a lot better when you're doing the show here. Okay, Kenny says he'll try to be there. I know you will, Ken. You always do, buddy. One thing I want to talk to you about, like I said, we'll save it. Sometimes I go to the Contra Radio Network Facebook page. You can see links to all the stories we've talked about tonight. I think that's important for you. because sometimes there are links within the story. I don't always give you the links because it doesn't matter. So, again. And that'll do it for this episode of Contra Radio Network. I want to say thank you again for joining me on your Saturday night as we get closer to the celebration of the birth of our Savior. And if you're Muslim, I don't care. Live with it. You're an atheist, I don't care. Live with it. Deal with it, Jack. With that said, I want to say to you, thank you for listening to the Contra Radio Network. You are the most responsible, intelligent audience because you listen to me. I thank you so much for it. I'm humbled that you want to listen to my blatherings and my information that I give out to you because, like I said, it's up to you to decide what's valuable to you and what is not. That's your choice entirely. So until next Wednesday at the Roundtable Report, I am John Jeffers telling you, be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. Until next time, thank you again for listening to Contra Radio Network. Good night, Ken. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you Wednesday. Good night.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.